the architectural adoption of shipping containers and boxes through clearly attuned to current recycling trends also follows established inclinations in modern architecture. In particular, the propensity to house humans in box-like structures. Among the architects who best demonstrate this urge is Louis Sullivan, who was lured to Chicago after it burned to the ground in 1871, simulating a building boom that saw the city's population triple from 1,098,000 by 1893. So he was famous as a proponent of the decorative treatment of skyscrapers. And he saw the innovation, objectively coining the phrase "form follows function" in an 1896 poem so resonant it's worth quoting in full. Here's the quote. "It is the pervading law of all things organic and inorganic, of all things physical and metaphysical, of all things human and all things superhuman, of all true manifestations of the head, of the heart, of the soul. The life is recognizable in its expression, that form ever follows function. This is the law." Now, Louis Sullivan is mostly known as a pioneering American architect, often called the father of skyscrapers and the father of modernism. And he played a critical role in shaping early modern architecture, as he was a mentor to Frank Lloyd Wright, who actually used to work in his office early in his career. And his innovation, he helped develop the first generation of skyscrapers in Chicago after the Great Fire of 1871. So Chicago was kind of this nexus of boxes, strangely. It's like I didn't know that. I had this all stuff that I just learned. And some of his notable buildings are the Wainwright Building in St. Louis in 1891, the Carson Parry Scott Building in Chicago, built in 1899, well, 1899 to 1904. And these buildings kind of reflected his use of the vertical emphasis and unified form in tall commercial structures. And he believed that architecture had a spiritual and democratic role in society. And he wanted to create a distinct style of the area. But his theoretical writings and works, they influence modern architecture, especially in the United States. And one of his writings is "The Tall Office Building Artistically Considered." What is the chief characteristic of the tall office building? It is lofty. It must be tall. The force and power of altitude must be in it. The glory and pride of exaltation must be in it. It must be every inch a proud and soaring thing, rising in sheer exaltation, that from bottom to top, it is a unit without a single dissenting line. So to him, these buildings should express its height in design and not try to fight it, but to kind of lean into it. And this was unique because it broke with the European architectural tradition. The French modernist architect, Le Corbusier, equals or exceeds Sullivan as a proponent of the skyscraper, at least in theory. Corbusier designed vast interconnected imaginary cities that would house millions in utopian, high-efficiency machines for living, quote-unquote, replacing rundown old cities like Paris. So in his early urban plans, he had these clusters of 60-story steel-framed skyscrapers that would be linked by highly rational circulatory systems of integrated roadways. And inside the towers, it had these domestic workspaces that were designed for living and working. Kind of reminds me a little bit of like Jacques Tati's Playtime, which I think is an amazing movie. It's like you can just so clearly visibly see all the scenes from the street. So it's like the main character's going in and he's, you know, enacting an argument or something's going on, and you just have these, you know, it really is the visible society. And this is kind of how skyscrapers just conceptually got their big glass curtains that would sort of transparently illuminate the inner workings of what was happening inside of them. And this tradition was associated with Jean-Jacques Rousseau. So these architects made transparency fundamental to their work. Transparency of materials and the flooding of light into carefully grid-planned interiors symbolize the dual process of enlightenment and the apparent rationalization of everyday life. That architectural form has social consequences, though, and this was embedded in Le Corbusier's dictum of 1923 that, quote, "It is a question of building that is at the root of social unrest today." So, architecture or revolution? And this tract was called Architecture or Revolution. He proposed that a new built form would result in a reduction in crime and of revolutionary fervor by stoking the workers' deep satisfaction in this newly modernized, ultra-transparent urban space. This space would be ultra-efficient, appropriate to mechanization, a concept summarized handily, less is more. Well, that turned out to be completely wrong. As we've now sort of resurrected Jeremy Bentham's prison architecture in the Panopticon, and you can see that this imprisoned transparency only set the standard for increasingly pervasive surveillance. And his failures were not really just fodder for theory. The massive public housing developments and modern high-rises devised the world over in his wake, such as Chicago's infamous Cabrini-Green public housing project, which made real-life boxed human beings anything but satisfied. I think that's when we look at what this kind of architecture has done to society, I think it's had a really kind of negative effect, you know. And now it's like the right is to disappear, you know, like that's we have to have a right to privacy, you know, at least in terms of our communities, you know. Obviously, we can actually share more. We can live more communally, more harmoniously. But under this kind of current system, it's really, really challenging to find that balance. The feminist historian Angel Kolek-Folland argued that greater specialization and its accompanying spatial arrangements were thought to promote greater efficiency by expunging work of all its superfluous gestures, details, and distractions. And functionality, it could be said, is a mechanical value system that, when imposed on organic people, can have severe consequences. Architects and critics like Robert Venturi, Dennis Scott Brown, and Stephen Eisenhower famously argued against the plain functional box in their 1972 book, Learning from Las Vegas, The Forgotten Symbolism of Architectural Form. As they point out, all buildings are boxes of a sort, but the history of architecture prefers buildings as symbols, cathedrals, civic buildings, and regional architectures symbolizing and instantiating the social order. For them, the buildings made in the form of symbols, a duck-shaped building for a duck store, I love stuff like that. We have to bring that back if we possibly can. I think that's the most important thing we can do, at least. I mean, there are too many other important things. We can worry about that one later. And decorated boxes, sheds of the Las Vegas Strip offered symbolic richness and formal diversity missing from the purified spaces of the modernist container for living. And they argue that architecture depends on its perception and creation of past experience and emotional association, and that symbolic and representational elements often be contradictory to the form, structure, and program with which they combine in the same building. So there's this depletion of symbolic association in the universalizing modernist box. And a movie, iRobot, extends this kind of overdetermined model of rational efficiency and Cartesian spatial control to the artificial intelligence of the building itself. And these miscalculated ideals of skyscraper architects were really kind of perversely translated into the soul of the building. And so the movie details how the U.S. robotic company is taken over by the central computer, Vicky. And Vicky is housed in corporate headquarters in a skyscraper that looms over Detroit. The year is 2005, and Vicky has determined that people are too self-destructive to run their own world. And the film takes place beside this dried up lake bed that was once Lake Michigan, amongst the planet's largest sources of fresh water. So she turns the company robots against the human beings. I just watched this movie recently for the first time. Shout out to Will Smith. Significantly for our purposes, the robots are housed in a field of stacked shipping containers from which they emerge to protect the skyscraper that houses the mother brain. The embodiments of the shipping container and the skyscraper are thus better able to sustain survival than the self-serving human being. Buckminster Fuller, who I've spoken a lot about in the past, I'm a big fan, and he was really critical of the exploitative habits of the mechanized world and wanted to create a general law of total synergetical structuring. And you could find this in his geodesic dome designs, the Montreal Biosphere from Expo 67, his best known built dome. And so these domes were strong and they never really caught on. But the modernist box has been, in many ways, just the consequences in terms of like mental, spiritual, social alienation have been so damaging. I don't think, you know, because the boxes are cool for all of their efficiency, they've really sort of put us in a strange, uncomfortable predicament. The influence of cubism on the art of the 20th century can scarcely be overstated, and the effect was not only visual. For some, this shattered cubist surface suggested political commentary, representing a world on the brink of destruction. For others, the objective analysis of painterly space suggested a movement towards full-blown abstraction. So Malevich and cubism, I wonder if we're going to have a cubist renaissance as the boxes of our time kind of shatter, and, you know, trying to have a bit of hope here. I think, yeah, I'm wondering what our response to all of this would be. Joseph Albers' homage to the square is another one. Agnes Martin, Paul Cézanne, and he advised painters to treat nature by the cylinder, the sphere, and the cone. But he might have also included the cube. Cézanne's geometric solids and multiple focal points suggested new possibilities in picture making to George Brock and Pablo. But not everybody liked boxes. In Mark Levinson's book, the box, how the shipping container made the world smaller and the world economy bigger. He talks about how there was early resistance to the box, like from labor unions and regulatory agencies and traditional port operators, because the transition to containerization disrupted existing industries and forced ports, cities, and entire economies to adapt or decline. And so it became a global catalyst in this way. Containerization was made economically feasible to produce goods far from where they were consumed, and that helped fuel globalization and global supply chains. Economic transformation, it shifted trade patterns. And so it bolstered the growth of new trade hubs like Singapore or Rotterdam. Malcolm McLean did not invent the shipping container. What he invented was a system for using it, is a pretty good quote. So a box isn't just a story about a steel container. It's a study of how a simple idea scaled to the right systems and vision can disrupt economies, alter trade dynamics, and shape the modern world. I wonder if simple ideas can actually change the world now. That's kind of what I'm thinking. It's like simplifying things, just enjoying the little things. That just seems to be where it's at.